Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
In 1963, a high school teacher's wife rescued from the bin three pages of a story that he had started but given up on. "This is really rather good," she told him. "You should keep going with it." So he did. And 50 years ago this week, Stephen King's Carrie was published. At the start of a career that was to go on to 400 million book sales worldwide, 30 number one bestsellers, and too many movies to try and recall. So to try and measure the influence of this man, Stephen King's work, I am joined in studio by no less than Ireland's answer to Stephen King, John Connolly. Good morning. There are going to be a number of points of comparison throughout the course of this interview, but just so that people don't think that John Connolly has notions, it's me who is making
you have notions.
Comparison.
Oh, we knew you had notions.
Well, I have notions on your behalf in this context. What was the first Stephen King that you read?
For me, it was Salem's Lot, which I read as a teenager. And I think a lot of readers come to King as a teenager, and I think it's one of the reasons why he's so strong. Carrie is an odd book. Even King, I don't think, particularly likes it. It's very fractured. It doesn't follow a linear structure. It's quite short. He had been reading, I think he'd been teaching Dracula to high school students at the time, and you can see the influence of Dracula on its structure. And later, the next novel is Salem's Lot, which is a vampire book, and very much an attempt. So we have an Irish angle. Always nice to have an Irish angle. So we have an attempt to kind of transplant that vampire mythology to the United States. But I think you see in both Salem's Lot and Carrie the things that King is very good at. I'm just out of curiosity, do you read King?
A little bit, a long time ago.
Okay, that's got to come, because I think there's still a kind of snobbery about horror in particular is regarded
as a bit
infradig.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things we should just go, what do we mean when we talk about horror? Because I think people immediately associate it with vampires, werewolves and ghosts, and horror is much more complicated than that. But the things King is really good at is already there in Carrie. The first thing is he writes very well about the ordinary. Ordinary life.
That was the first point of attraction for me, and I think I'm interested in getting your view on this, because it strikes me that he writes in a voice that Americans would like to think of themselves as being nice, genial, down-to-earth people who are then cast into extraordinary situations.
I think he captures ordinary life very well. I think that's selling him short, to be honest, because I think he grew up in a very hardscrabble existence. He grows up with a single mother, an older brother who's since deceased. They don't have a lot of money. He is working as well as doing a bit of writing on the side and teaching. He's worked in a hospital laundry, you know, cleaning bloody sheets for $1, $1.50 or $1.60 an hour. So he's known what it is to be difficult. And I think anybody who has gone to a non-fee-paying school knew somebody like Carrie White. It was the kid in school who was either bullied or a bully. Maybe they smelt a bit funny. Their clothing was a bit more tattered. And you had the suspicion that something not quite right was happening at home. We all knew people like that. Certainly I knew people when I was in Sing Street who you just felt that was wrong. He's very good at tapping into that. And if you get ordinary life right, the extraordinary is so much more impactful and strange when it happens. So he writes about people who are going through addiction. He writes about kids who are struggling with adolescence and bullying. He writes about women who are in abusive relationships and trying to get out of them. He writes about ordinary people very, very
but
well.
But it starts from that position of being very ordinary, like, as you say, it's a sort of a what-if exercise, isn't it? What if the girl in school who was bullied develops telekinetic powers? What if, you know, because all authors must find fans a little bit of a pain in the bum, what if one supervan abducts you and breaks your legs? But it starts from something very ordinary.
All fiction starts with a what if. That's the basis. That's what we do. We sit down and write one of those stories. I think King then does is he has one thing that he understands very, very deeply, which is that everybody is frightened. It's just that the things that we were afraid of change as we get older. When you're a child, you're afraid of what happens if something happens to your parents. You realize, children have an instinctive idea of their own vulnerability, I think. They realize that, you know, the adult world is actually quite dangerous. And it's good to have your parents around. I remember when I was young, I've always been very frightened of something happening to my parents. So what will happen to me? In adolescence, you become aware that adult world is that's your next step. And nobody ever feels prepared for it. When you enter middle age, you become fearful for your children. You also become fearful for your parents because they're growing older. And I'm at that stage now where, you know, I realise that I have illness to come. I probably have the inevitability of death. So we're always frightened. And what King allows us to do is to explore fear. And allied to that is horror.
And to therapize our fear as well. Absolutely. Because I've heard him say in an interview that once I have written about this, once I have uttered this terrible thing's name, well, then the fear dissipates.
I think it's easier to deal with, as we've always spoken about catharsis, going back to Greek drama. This idea that you purge yourself by exploring the thing that frightens you or terrifies you. You know, horror is an emotion that we generally experience alone. And we experience it quite frequently. We don't tend to use the word horrific about vampires and ghosts. We horrific car accidents, the horror of Gaza, the horror of the Ukraine. Horror is always about suffering. It's about suffering and cruelty. And it's about physical, psychological or emotional suffering. And we are all familiar with that. We will all go through those things in our lives. And King, he anatomizes those things in his books. And he has spoken about mass media as being a kind of therapist's couch for everybody. There are people who will want to explore the feelings this way. It's not for everybody. Mm. Not everybody is going to want to explore these feelings through fiction or through film or whatever it might be. But King is saying, if you do, I will go with you. And Carrie is interesting because Carrie is a version of the Cinderella story. Cinderella goes to the ball, but it doesn't work out the way that she wanted it to. Mm. And at one point, I think he was going to have Carrie leave her dancing shoe in the wreckage of the school hall at the end of this carnage. But I think he probably felt that was too much on the nose. That's what fairy stories do. When we tell them to children, we're kind of saying to them, these things are terrifying. The world is a frightening place. But I will be beside you. And if you have a certain degree of strength of character, if you're prepared to face these things, you can come through them because other people have come through them before you.
When you developed Charlie Parker and the series of books, how consciously were you channeling King and that kind of what if? What if somebody who should be hard-boiled and cynical because of all of the things that he has experienced actually ends up developing this supernatural empathy with human beings?
He casts a very long shadow. I think once you read King, and if you're somebody who is working in the area of commercial fiction or is conscious of genre fiction as a tool, you can't escape King's influence. His voice is very strong. He makes it look effortless. It's very hard to make something look effortless. And I think that's why he's sometimes underestimated as well, because actually his prose style is so easy to read that people...
Everybody feels, I could do that.
I could do it. Very difficult to do. He's completely sui generis because he came of age, or at least began publishing at a time when there were quite a lot of a new generation of horror writers coming up. He is the only one who has mass appeal. He appeals to women. He appeals to adolescents. He appeals to male readers. He goes across a whole range of genres. And sometimes male writers can be accused of maybe not writing women very well. It's not true of King. You don't sell that many books if you're not appealing to women, and women don't see a truth in what you're writing. So he's very good on women as well.
You say he casts a long shadow. You almost went racing towards it, though, by travelling to Maine, basing so much of your own work in Maine. Just total geographical coincidence?
Initially it was. I mean, I suppose I had an awareness of the place because I had read King, but a friend of mine, his uncle owned a hotel up there and he offered me a job when I was struggling a little bit. So that's how I ended up there. But I thought initially that I was writing mystery fiction. I was in touch of the supernatural to it. And at the moment you introduce the supernatural, King's, you're being touched by King's shadow. But then
You couldn't have written those characters in Ireland, could you? Would it have just felt hokey? Would it not have worked?
You know, I think what's lovely about the United States is the size of the backdrop. Yeah. You know, the canvas that you work against is so much larger there. You can write them here. There's a whole, I'm thinking of people like Sophie White and a new generation of young Irish horror writers coming up.
No, I didn't mean you plural. I meant you individual. Would you have ever thought about trying to do the Charlie Parker series in Ireland?
No, I don't think it would have worked. And also, I wanted to get away from everything to do with Irish literature. I made no apologies for it. I felt it was very insular. I think it was very much mired in the past. And it was a way of escape. And I think Irish people have always looked to the United States or Australia or England as a means of escape. But it's often geographic. Mine was creative and imaginative.
And one of the other points of, not comparison, actually, sorry, it's difference, is your hesitation around TV. Now, I know Charlie Parker has been developed for television, but when you think about how King has thrown himself headlong into movies and television, what's your hesitation?
I'm quite happy to have somebody buy me a yacht, so I'm not that above myself. It's largely out of the hands of the writer, but I think King wrote a book called Dance Macabre, which was very much about the influence that television and film had had on him in a way that probably didn't have the same influence on me. And I think he's written 19 screenplays and he's directed a couple of movies himself. So he hasn't been
as successful as when he's let others do it.
No, and I think he realises that himself. I think he was curious to explore it, but I think he realised, and very famously he had issues with Kubrick's version of The Shining, which was a Kubrick movie more than a Stephen King movie. But I think he's come to terms with that as well. By and large, writers get stung when they go into film and television. They never come out of it quite as happy as they think they would be. So I've always very sensibly kept my distance.
Make the case for rebuffing those who look down their noses at horror as a genre.
I think I probably have. I feel I have. I think it's a general snobbery that we assume that this stuff is not as well written as literary fiction, that it cannot aspire to the condition of art. And that's kind of foolishness. I think I was published by the same publisher as John le Carré for a long time. And le Carré had some of these issues in that le Carré ploughed a very narrow but deep furrow, which was espionage literature, the idea of human beings' capacity for betrayal. And in the last decade of his life, he left Hodder and Stoughton because he wanted to move to Penguin because they were going to put him in Penguin Modern Classics. And he thought if he was put in those little green jacketed books with a little penguin on the bottom, that he would be perceived as literature. And to some degree, that happened. Even something as simple as the way something is jacketed changes the way that people perceive it. Fiction is still predominantly read by women. There are men who will not pick up fiction at all because it's not real or it's not truthful. So there's no limit to the depths of human foolishness. Like King, I no longer feel any need to try and defend horror, to defend a Western. These are tools that a writer uses. They're as close to you as your pen. All that matters is how you use them. As Duke Ellington said, there are only two types of music, good music and the other kind. There are only two kinds of writing, good writing and the other kind.
Does it rankle, though, that the industry still hasn't made that realisation itself? Because I think you've picked up all sorts of awards all over the place, but they have been horror or mystery awards. I think you've been shortlisted for the Booker once.
No, I've never been.
Oh, sorry.
Funny, I was doing an interview for a newspaper this week and I was asked why I don't go to the Irish Book Awards. And one of the reasons is that I don't really care. I don't want to go and eat chicken in a basket of 5-1 odds. It just does not interest me. I think you reach a point where you're quite happy and content with what you're doing and you're satisfied with it. And that kind of outside approval doesn't really matter. And there will always be naysayers. When King was awarded the American Book Award, Harold Bloom, who's a notoriously acerbic critic, said that he regarded it as this was the dumbing down of American, American cultural life. But I doubt Harold Bloom had ever picked up one of Stephen King's books. You're often being criticised by people who don't read you as a matter of principle. And it's probably more productive and healthier to look at the people who do read you and say, okay, they get what I do. I don't need everybody else to do it. Well, this discussion, it's been going on really for about the last 100 years. What value does genre fiction have? Is a piece of fiction automatically inferior because it has a ghost in it, because it has a werewolf in it, because it has a teenage girl with telekinesis in it? And there's a suspicion of it because it's powerful and it's appealing. For a long time, Carrie was the most challenged book on the American Library Association's database for years because there were adults who didn't want teenagers reading a book about being a teenager. And they didn't want it. It's certainly not through horror, not that medium of horror. And as my friend Daryl Jones, who teaches in Trinity, once said, if you're a teenager, if you're growing hair on the palm of your hands, if you're growing hair all over you, if you're growing hair in all places, if your body is doing things that you don't want it to do, if you've had wild mood swings, why wouldn't you want to read about a werewolf or a vampire? These are your people. They become kind of symbols for what we're going through. They become means of exploring what we're going through.
But it is not just the monsters that walk among us that he is writing about, because there is a resonance I pick up for all kinds of aspects of the modern condition and where we find ourselves politically. As you look at the news landscape, King is explaining that world.
He's already, The Dead Zone, which is a book I think he wrote in the 1970s about a demagogic politician who uses the Bible for his own end, suddenly became very prescient when Donald Trump began flogging Bibles on television. And suddenly it looked like King had his finger on the pulse a long time before anybody else. He's political with a small p. You know, the idea that horror doesn't have anything to do with the real world is a kind of nonsense. Horror is intimately concerned with the real world because horror is part of the condition of the world in which we live.
So I gather from what you're saying that a younger reader would do well perhaps to start with Salem's Lot. If somebody of a certain age hasn't read that much King or needs to be reintroduced, where should I start?
If you're into historical fiction, he wrote a very interesting book about a man trying to undo the Kennedy assassination, which is a beautifully written piece of political prose. I think that it's 11/22/63, was that the date of Kennedy?
22nd of November. Yeah, that's the screwed up way Americans write dates.
But that's the title of the book. And that's a really beautifully written piece of kind of historical fiction, a fascination with this pivotal moment in American history. But as you get older...
And in the horror genre?
I think a book like Bag of Bones or Lisi's Story, which are to do with the body's capacity for suffering as you get older, with how do you deal with your body letting you down. I think that's fascinating. The Dark Half, for anybody who's trying to write, the sources of inspiration, where does inspiration come from? How much are writers captive to the characters they create? You know, whatever phase of life you're at, King will have written about it. He will have written about it in some shape or form. He's very, very good.
John Connolly, thank you very much for that appreciation of Stephen King, 50 years on from the first publication of Carrie.
Email brendan@rte.ie.